Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as 3 suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
It's Gone to the Dogs podcast time once again, friends. Steve Fielder here with you. If I were to pick a title for this episode this week, it would have to be Off the Cuff. I'm suffering, I guess you would say, from a bit of a sinus infection. I don't know what exactly it is. We live here in Florida. It's an incubator for all kinds of little bugs and viruses and things like that. And unfortunately, if you're in this podcasting game, the voice is the major tool that you have to work with. And when the voice goes, then everything else goes with it. But we'll try to get through this podcast today with you and hopefully entertain you a bit and touch on some things that you may or may not have thought about. We're getting into the summer season. Here it is at the last of May, and the kids are all going to be out of school, driving the parents crazy. For those of you who have coon hunting kids, they're going to want you to be taking them out coon hunting. And, of course, these summertime days are a little rough and a little challenging. And that's the time of the year the kids look forward to all year long, and maybe the parents dread the most. But at any rate, it's summertime, and I just wish all of you out there across the fruited plain, as Rush Limbaugh would say, a very enjoyable summer, swimming, fishing, boating. And for many of you, going to the competition hunts, which always continue throughout the summer. I always get on my soapbox about my breed association, the National Plothound Association, holding their breed days in the warmer months, but that seems to be their thing. We went from originally way back. The date was September. The bear hunters began to complain about having to choose between plot days and going to Michigan and Wisconsin bear hunting when the season opened. So they moved the plot days event back to the first week in August. And there it was for many, many years. Those were the dates that my dad and I looked forward to each year. But, man, it was always hot, whether we were in Florida, Illinois, or Tell City, Indiana, or Boonville, Indiana, or Marshall, Illinois, or wherever. It was always seemed like it was along a river, and it was humid and hot, and mosquitoes were in droves and all. But we still had a great time. And but anyway, now the event has been moved to June, under the guise, and I'll be a little tough on our leadership, that this is somehow springtime. June is, if you live in Florida, I promise you, as I did this morning when I walked out to let the dog out and stepped into a sauna, you won't think that June is summer, springtime. But anyway, here we are. It is, by the time you hear this podcast, we will be in the month of June. As I'm recording this a little late because of the voice issues, it is the 30th day of May. I was looking through social media today and something came up that I thought was pretty interesting. You know, we have our little stops along the way in life of things that we remember. When I was a kid, and we lived in southern West Virginia, for the first few years of my life, we did not have an automobile. My dad either depended on friends to take him to work, or he rode the public transportation. Once we got a car, our first one was a 1952 Ford Mainliner. It was green in color, about as plain as you could buy in those days. I'm sure Dad didn't have a lot of money to spend on an automobile, but he bought a brand new 1952 Ford Mainliner, it was called. I often referred to it as being telephone truck green because the telephone company in our area, Chesapeake in Ohio, I think it was called, Chesapeake and Potomac, CNP Telephone Company had these green-colored vehicles. Anyway, we would the family would get into that 52 Ford a couple of times a year, if we were lucky, and make the 500-mile drive down to Dixon County, Tennessee, where my grandmother and grandfather lived on a small farm. That farm is still in my family, so to speak. My first cousin, Pam, and her husband, Eddie, still live there, having inherited the place from my uncle. But at any rate, as we would drive, our journey would take us from Beckley, West Virginia, down through Bluefield, Tazewell, Virginia, where my brother lived prior to moving to Florida recently, and on down through East Tennessee, and ultimately to Nashville, and then 30 miles beyond to Dixon County. One of the stops along the way was in Claypool Hill, Virginia. That's just west of Tazewell, going toward Lebanon, Virginia. And there was a stop there along the way, a restaurant, a gas station. Some would call it a beer joint. They always had the jukebox playing. And as often as not, there would be a song playing on the jukebox at Claypool Hill by none other than Ernest Tubb. And there was an article in on social media that on this day that I'm recording in 1941, Ernest Tubb changed country music history by introducing a song that he wrote called "Walking the Floor Over You." Now, I remember this very, very well as a kid, and I've thought about maybe giving you my rendition of it, but I think I'm going to spare you that agony. But it was a hit for Ernest Tubb, and he would, you know, go on to become a musical standard in country music. Okay, and it really put Ernest Tubb on the map. So if you ever listen to Ernest Tubb with that gravelly West Texas voice, you know, you had to think about that song, "I'm Walking the Floor Over You." So we chased that rabbit out Texas way, but I just couldn't help but remember those trips that we would stop there at Claypool Hill. Old timers in Western Virginia will remember that very, very well. Okie dokie. Well, you know, back in 2015, I wrote a book, and many of you have copies of that book, and I appreciate you so much for buying the book. And we're just about down to the very last few copies of the first edition. And don't think that we'll probably reprint it, because people just don't read like they used to. They get their news and their entertainment in little snippets, mostly on the screen of a cell phone scrolling by. They don't take the time to sit down with the book and all. But, you know, I enjoyed writing the book. I really did. And I put together I think there was 20-some essays in that book, and it was an enjoyable trip for me, just to archive, if nothing else, a lot of memories that I had down through the years. And one of those essays in the book was titled 10 Things Every Coon Hunter Should Know. Now, you know, we all have our own views about this sport. We all think we know all there is to know about it, and we're usually pretty open to sharing our ideas and thoughts. If you want to verify that, just go on to a thread in, for instance, the Coon Hunting Conversations group on Facebook that I started a few years ago. And then my friend Alan Bridges in Georgia has helped me in monitoring that site. You'll see someone answer a question and forthcoming or just answers of every type. So we all have a lot of information. Some of it's good, some not so good. But I enjoyed doing that particular essay with the idea of helping hunters by giving them some basics that they need to know if they're going to get into the sport. Thought I might just run down that list with you a little bit today. Since I'm flying solo, I didn't want to put a guest through the agony of me hitting the mute button every few minutes to cough, and hopefully I'll get through this today. But the first thing that I thought was important for anyone getting involved in coon hunting is to learn the fundamentals of the sport. You know, what are the fundamentals? You know, if you go into Little League baseball, your kid, or T-ball, they're going to teach him the basics. You know, how to swing the bat, how to catch the ball, how to use two hands to keep the ball from rolling out of the glove. You know, how to run the bases. How to shag a fly ball. All these fundamental aspects of a sport that's just tailor-made for kids, and one that for many can be enjoyed throughout a lifetime. When I lived in Michigan, I played softball well up into my 60s, really. And so anyway, the fundamentals of coon hunting. And in this book, I cite an example of a couple of young guys that I met on a parking lot in a Walmart parking lot in West Jefferson, North Carolina. Now, I just came back from that area last week. I took this young plot dog that I have named Ghost up to my partner, Mark Miller, who he and I have the fever dog together. And I took Ghost up there to leave him with Mark, with the idea that Mark will give him that same kind of basic training that was so successful with Fever, who is now a quad grand champion. He's also somebody's sending me a message. I don't want any messages, so I'll just mute that. But anyway, that training that Mark gave Fever resulted in him becoming a quadruple grand in UKC, a PKC champion, several qualifications for Tournament of Champions and the World Hunt and all that. So Mark is a guy that I trust very, very much with my dogs. He and I own the Fever dog together. But this pup is out of Fever, and I took him up to Mark's and left him. Hopefully Mark will be able to get him along the same path that Fever took. But while I was up there, I went into the Walmart in West Jefferson. There was a town. I had a cabin near there and enjoyed very much and did a lot of trout fishing. In fact, I did on this trip. I set aside one day to go back to Helton Creek and fish where I'd fished for those years that I lived in that area. And when I parked my truck on the parking lot there, I remembered this incident of meeting these two young guys. Now, these fellows were in an older vehicle, and they had a beat-up old dog box in the back of it. And I saw them there on the lot, so I just walked. They actually came over and said hello to me. And They were wearing camo, and I could smell a little wood smoke on their clothing, so I knew they were country boys. And I asked them if they were coon hunters, and they said, yeah. And then I asked them what kind of dogs they hunted, and they said that they hunted, had an old Walker female and a young blue tick. And I asked them jokingly, I said, why do you have a blue tick? And the smaller of the two kids said, because a blue tick's better than a black and tan. So we all had a good laugh out of that. And anyway, I told them I was probably worse off in the dog department than they were because I had a plot. And I told them that I had a dog in my box, and I did. I had the old Hoss dog. And so I showed them Hoss and put him through a few of his tricks and all. And they thought that was pretty cool. The point of this, and this using him as an example in this segment of this article, 10 Things Every Coon Hunter Should Know, was I wanted to try to, you know, get them off on the right foot if I could, or try to help them. And they asked me, would I train a dog for them? And I said, no, I'm really not into training dogs for other people, but I would go hunting with them. And I did. And we had a couple of enjoyable hunts over time. But I just tried to go over the basics with them a little bit, you know, of the sport, and you know, and told them, you know, the best way to train a coonhound is just to let them develop at their own pace. I always like to take them out and give them opportunities to do what their genetics provided them with the tools to do. So anyway, you know, it's... the lesson was in that particular item number one, which was learning the fundamentals, is to have patience, to just take your time. You know, these stud dog ads and so forth, and especially when we have the social media now, always trying to, you know, strive for that 6-month wonder that we hear about. And But I cited in this article the old slogan from Ernest and Julio Gallo, the winemakers, we will sell no wine before it's time. So if we apply that philosophy to pup training, then, you know, we don't cull a pup until we are sure that it's mature enough to absorb the training that we're giving them. So was item number one. The second thing that a coon hunter should know, certainly, and it's more difficult nowadays than ever, is how to find places to hunt. You know, a safe place where you can take a dog and release that dog and let him range out and find a coon if he has to go some distance. And so anyway, I deal with that in the second item in that article. You know, we see these things just recently in North Carolina, an attempt to require everyone to have written permission if they're hound hunting. And that's a tough one right there. It's difficult because most landowners don't mind you hunting, but they don't want to sign anything because they feel it makes them liable. But I talked to these boys, and then as I'm talking to you, you know, you just have to have safe places to turn these hounds loose. And I'm thankful that Mark, my partner up there, has several places that he can take the dogs that I feel are safe, and that's just so important. The third item there, and the things that every coon hunter should know, is how to select the right gear for hunting. You know, we talk about you got a $40,000 truck, $1,000 tracking system or more, an $800 dog box, a $500 shock collar, if you use that, it's separate from your tracking unit, a $400 light, $200 for a pair of boots, and a $2 dog on the end of your leash. But dog prices certainly have gone up, and I think a lot of that's due to these newer hunts that we're having where there's just astronomical purses to be won. However, in any money hunt, and sometimes we lose sight of this, or we can lose sight of it, we're hunting for our own money. You know, my buddy Jamie Perrin down in Alabama calls us, we're pot builders. You know, we put the money in at the entry table, and only a few are going to be able to take a piece of that money back home after the hunt. But anyway, having the right gear to me is so important. John Wick said way back there when he invented the frog leg wader, he said, you know, when your feet get wet, the fun's over. So you need, I think, from the ground up, fundamentally a good pair of boots. The boots I'm wearing now are just tailor-made for an old codger like me. They're lightweight, they're tough, they're comfortable, and that's the Bikina boot. I bought these from Bob Osborne down in Mississippi. Has the Yoder chap on it. They work great for me. That's what I use. I've used many different kinds over the years, and my go-to for many, many years was the Grange boot from Lacrosse, just the knee boot, and then later on I had those, had John and Linda Wick sew the Wick chap to the top of those. That was the innovation that changed coon hunting, that Wick frog leg with the waders sewn to the boots, allowed us to keep them rolled down, and then when we came to a stream or a thick briar patch or whatever, we could pull them up. Especially in these hot months of the summer, that wearing those things up all the time can get kind of toasty warm. But anyways, a good pair of boots, man, that's fundamental to coon hunting. Next, of course, would be the light. And, man, what an evolution we've had in lights. You know, I started with a carbide light. And then when Bill Boatman invented the Dynalight flashlight, a six-cell light, I had one of those. In fact, it even had a charger that you could plug in, screw into the headpiece and charge your batteries. I didn't have one of those. I don't know how well they worked. I know we didn't have rechargeable batteries at that time. We just had the regular old Rayovac or Everettis or whatever those were. That was even before the days of Duracell for me. But it was a game changer. 90,000 candle power. Man, that thing would light up the night. So a good light source for walking, for shining the tree. Now that's just gone over the top. You know, I've got a virtual instrument panel on my head. Nowadays I'm wearing the Heat Seeker by Bright Eyes. And, you know, I've got various colors of lenses that I can use for shining, and I've got a laser pointer, and just, you know, it's phenomenal. And I'm told that the newest edition is much brighter than the one I have now, so I guess probably at Autumn Oaks I'll have Ray Conrad upgrade mine. But I do like that Bright Eyes light. So, you know, that's, and then, of course, the biggest game changer in our sport by far has been the Garmin GPS collar. And I know there are other brands, Dogtra and the other one, what's the, I don't use anything but Garmin, so we'll just let it go with that. Man, oh, man, I was able to participate in some of the testing on the early Garmin collars while I was at the AKC, and really was able to be instrumental in getting Garmin involved in coon hunting, and I'm kind of proud of that, and also proud of where those products have come. And it's rare that you see somebody that's not utilizing a GPS collar of one type or the other on their dogs nowadays. Of course, you need a dog box. Man, have those things gone through the roof as far as cost involved. Mark Blount, my hunting buddy in Michigan, was the first guy really to market the commercial dog box. He built them out of scrap materials from the RV industry in Elkhart, Indiana, where he worked. And the Blount custom-built dog box was top storage, was the first production model of a factory-made dog box for coon hunting. And now that's just gone crazy. There's been so many different brands, and my good friend Mark Zepp is really building a nice one and aluminum box. But man, the prices of those things have gone into four figures now. So I think you could have bought a top storage Blount custom built box for somewhere around maybe $200 or less back in the day. So anyway, the gear is so important. And then we come along with these thermal imaging scopes that are just about a necessity if you're going to take the competition game seriously. And they're particularly handy if you're training young dogs, especially through the summer months when the foliage is all on and all. They really are an aid. How many times we walk up to a tree and say, that's the way that dog put that track in there and all. I know that coon's there, but you just can't find him. And it still happens even with the thermals. They're not foolproof, but man, they do make a big difference. Well, the fourth thing that I talked about in this article was how to buy a coonhound without getting burned. And everybody has their stories of how they started out. They probably bought a dog off the local trade paper in their town. Somebody advertised the dog for sale. They went to a major event like Grand American, made the mistake of walking through the dog yard and listening to the stories. And somebody that likes dogs and sells dogs would never lie to you, right? But the thing about it is there's been some really great bargains picked up at those kind of facilities too, those kind of dog trader rows, so to speak. Many times these traders don't really know what they have. I think these dogs change hands and they believed a story, and maybe the story was true. But at any rate, I started this section by saying coon hunters are human, and humans by their very nature will lie. It's easy to tell a lie for some if there's a monetary gain to be had. So if I can make $300 or $400 off you, but stretching the truth a little bit about this dog, then yeah, that's all. All's fair in love and war, you know. So my word of caution to you, if you're starting out and don't have a coon dog, don't go there. Again, I would start off with an older dog that's a decent dog that can teach you the sport, can get out there and unravel tracks and come treat and stay treat and show you a coon in the tree and get your getting you firmly established in the sport and enjoying the trailing and the treeing and all. There's plenty of time to get that specialty dog, that dog that hunts just the way you want, the one that moves the track just the way you like it, the one that comes treed with that dying locate, the one that, you know, is a firm belly up, slobber slinging, toenails in the bark tree dog that you've always dreamed of. That will come down the road for you. You don't have to have all of that right at the start. So just take your time, talk around. There are buys out there to be had when an older dog has graduated out and the owner no longer has room for him. But anyway, when we put our nameplate on a dog, it becomes an extension of ourselves. And we have to reduce or avoid is what I'm trying to say. Avoid the opportunity or the impulse to make that dog sound bigger than life, better than he really is. You know, if we just, everyone would just tell the truth. I don't care what area of life it is. You know, man, if you're a person of faith, and I often let you know that I am a Christian, you know, and the Bible says that the place for liars is in the lake of fire. And that doesn't sound like a place I want to go. So just be truthful about your dog, you know. But the old adage is always true, and it always will be. If you don't know the dog, be sure you know the man that you're buying the dog from. If you trust that man to be truthful to you and you have a history with him, then you can feel fairly safe. But the best way is always to go and hunt with the dog. And then you can know. There may be something about that dog that you just don't like. Maybe he opens way too much on the ground to suit you, which is one of my pet peeves. I don't like a dog that opens every time his feet hits the ground. I like one to open according to the track. Some people don't want them to open at all. Some people want them to open at the snap and shut up and go a mile in there before they open again, which is another of my pet peeves, because that kind of dog usually gets the first strike. And having coon hunted all the years that I have, I know that a dog doesn't open on the chain, go line of sight a quarter mile, three quarters of a mile, open again and get treed all on the same track. Does not happen. Not now, not ever, never. Okay, well, anyway, you just got to be careful if you're going to buy a dog. And once again, try the dog. Don't just listen to the hype. All right, the fifth item was how to breed, buy, and train a coonhound pup. Now, that's a bird of a different color right there. There's all kinds of stud dogs out there. And I've often said, you know, you don't get the dog. You don't get the stud dog. You get what he produces. But if your dog comes from a good family of dog, or this puppy that you're looking at comes from a good family of dogs, or from a stud that's known to have produced good dogs, and equally as important, from a female that's known to produce good dogs, then your chances are a lot better of getting the type of pup that you want. But genetics are so important. You know, the puppy has to be born with the basic tool set through his genes, okay? There's no guarantees that a cross will be good. I hear all the time, this ought to be, I bred old Handy to old Reddy, and this ought to be a really good cross. Well, yes, it ought to be, but will it? Only God knows until those puppies get old enough and are given a proper chance to be, you know, all that they can be. One of the best things you can do if you're considering getting a puppy is to get that puppy from a family of dogs that carry the traits that you prefer in a coonhound. You know, if you want an open trailing dog, you want a dog that trails, cold trails, and you like listening to a dog work a track up in tree, then the parents of that puppy need to be that type of dogs. You know, any coonhound puppy today, I believe, possesses a treeing instinct. It didn't used to be that way. These dogs evolved from running dogs. The treeing had to be introduced in various ways and developed and purified down through the years until, you know, at one point in time, we got dogs that treed too much. And that may happen from time to time now, but I think the pendulum has swung back the other way, and we're seeing that most of the dogs now, accuracy has become a premium because of these events that we're having now where the stakes are so high and the time is so precious, every tick of that watch, that you can't be wasting time going to a slick tree and dog. You need to be able to find that coon when you get to that tree. The difference could be a new pickup truck. It could mean $100,000. So that slick treeing aspect in our dogs, I think, has largely been rectified. Not totally, of course, but it's soon evident. And don't lie to yourself. If your dog's slick treeing, don't convince yourself, well, it could have been there, it should have been there. The old saying is you'll find them if they're there, and that does apply most of the time. We could go back to our gear, that an item that I mentioned before is a good coon squaller, and knowing how to use it, and in combination with your dimmer lights, your red lights, or your amber, or whichever you choose, and find that coon. That's one thing any coon hunter needs to do. It's part of his basic training is to learn how to find a coon in that tree. But find a pup from a family of dogs. Longtime breeder Lance Hutton in Virginia said, family breed to establish your line, outcross to get your outstanding individuals, and if you can outcross to a family bred strain, then that's the icing on the cake. Lance has a couple of degrees in animal science. He's a sharp cookie, lifelong hounds person that I respect very much. Okay, so, you know, many of us lack of knowledge train a coonhound pup. And it's really not rocket science. It's there's a lot of things you can do. I always like to say that I just want to be able to expose that pup to all the different aspects of the game so that when he's ready, when his genetics manifest themselves, that he's going to be able to do what he was bred to do because you're giving him the opportunity. You know, and I could go through a whole list of things that I do with puppies. Scent training early on. My buddy, fellow podcaster Heath Hyatt, has some good episodes on scent work with young pups. I used to just use, like, take a hot dog and cut it in slices and put them in a little plastic bag, stick them in my pocket. Take the puppy out for a walk out across the lawn or a field or whatever, toss a piece of that out in front, and the pup, as we're walking along, oh, he finds that, you know, he smells it, his nose goes to work for him, and he finds something to eat, and it's good. And then, you know, we'll toss another one out in front, and just repeat that, you know. And then I've taken that and rubbed it on a little bush, or laid a piece up on the tailgate of the truck just to get him winding, and just using the nose. Just fundamental, you know. A dog does everything he does the help of his nose. You know, some dogs, we call them cold nose. Some dogs are hot nose. I believe it's all the excitability of level that scent presents to that dog, how he reacts to it. You know, I always liked the good cold trailer, but I like a dog that opened on that track and then drifted that track. And what we meant by drifting is that he determined the direction the track was going, headed in that direction. And when he found that scent again, he opened and he proceeded in that direction till he found it again, and he opened again. And so instead of, you know, sticking his nose in every footprint of that animal, he was catching it here, there, in the general direction it was going. And of course, he'd have to have the sense when he reached out and there was no scent there to swing back around and find the direction that the scent's going. Drifting track dog is something that I always appreciated and enjoyed in coon hunting. So that's the thing, that scent training early on. And of course, the obedience training, you know, teach that puppy to lead, teach it to load in the dog box. You know, I've been so encouraged by this pup that I've been working. He's 10 months old now, but he just picked up on those kind of things just real quick, just really, really quick. And now, you know, I went up to North Carolina and we were only able to hunt one night, but I saw him, you know, working a track on his own, trying to tree a track. While his sire was treed with a coon, he was on up the hill working one himself, trying to make it happen now. So that brings up the question, should we work these pups with older dogs or not? I say yeah, work them with a good hound. But once they start treeing on their own, running tracks and treeing on their own, then it's time to separate them out from the other dogs and take them and let them learn by themselves. And I think that's what most handlers are doing nowadays. You know, little things we can do the first time. If the season's in, shoot a coon out and drag that coon and put it up a tree and let the coon the pup tree that by scent. I would do that once, maybe twice at the most, no more. And we've talked about it so many times on this podcast, sight work, it's fun to watch a puppy really turn on to a cage coon. It kind of tells him what you want him to do, but that once or twice is plenty on that as well. But anyway, get a good blooded pup. Get one with the genetics, and then just do the fundamentals, the basics. Teach him, give him opportunities to use his nose, to work out a track, to locate something up over his head by scent. That's what separates the coon hound. You know, there's a lot of bear dogs that will watch a bear climb a tree and they'll sit there and bark at it. I hunted in West Texas, Southwest Texas, for bobcats with dogs that could flat run a bobcat. But they basically saw that bobcat climb that tree, and their eyes were on that dog. And, you know, they weren't tree dog stock, basically. You know, they were basically running dog stock, but they would tree. But what I want is the locating tree dog that trees on scent with the same confidence and assurity that he would have if he saw that animal climb the tree. It's what impresses me so much with the dog that my partner Mark Miller and I have. He trees with authority on scent, and he has his game. And that's what we're looking for. Okay, the next item I had on our list was to develop how to develop a lifetime network of coon hunting friends. I began that segment in that article by saying that I once talked to a fellow that told me he had worked hard for everything that he had attained in the sport, and no one else ever gave him anything. In other words, everything he had coming to him, he got simply because of his own actions. He didn't need anybody. He didn't have to thank anybody. He was a self-made coon hunter. And I had to say, as I said in the article, that I was proud of the fact that, you know, many of the treasures that I gained in the sport, including the tangible ones, came from other people. You know, this I am a rock, you know, will provide for some mighty lonely days when that gentleman gets to be my age, I can assure you, because right now I depend on my friends for so much, not in material things, but in fellowship and just that feeling of, you know, being with people you enjoy. And that's just the greatest feeling in the world, to have someone you pick up the phone and call and talk about who knows what. But just know that those people, I called my buddy Nubbin Moore. He and I've got to be very close friends over the years. And he was on the podcast here the other day. And I called him the other morning. He said, "Well, you must be psychic." He said, "I was just picking up the phone to call you." You know, that kind of friendship is priceless. There's no way you can put a value on that. We might talk about coon hunting. We might talk about our trips in the fall that we always take together. We might talk about fishing talk about history. Talk about how things were back when we were kids. I've learned a lot about the great state of Alabama by making a friend that was raised there. It's just priceless stuff. And I was so pleased the other day to see that his breed association had recognized him by presenting him the lifetime membership in the association, which is voted in. And it's a real honor in the Black and Tan Association. So, you know, how did he get that award? By being a friend to a lot of people in that association, and by having good dogs and proving it in competition. But the two go hand in hand. You know, you have friends. You have to have friends in this world. I've been fortunate to have one of the best networks of coon hunting friends and bear hunting friends that anyone could ever hope for. And that was basically because of my exposure. There's my brother sending me a message and wants to take us out to dinner. I'm going to respond to that real quick. The one thing I do love more than coon hunting is eating. Okay, but anyway, I realize so thankfully that, I wouldn't have a fraction of the friends I have in life without this sport and without traveling all over the country, meeting so many people over those many, many years. And in that article, I mentioned the fact that breed association membership is a very good place to start if you want to make friends in this business. At local clubs, certainly, you know, you're going to make friends among your fellow coon hunters in your local environs there. But a national network is even better, and you do that largely by joining a major breed association. Okay, here's one that a lot of people, young people, and I encounter these people on a fairly regular basis, and I'm glad that there are still people out there that are want to make their mark on the sport. How to make your mark on the sport. You know, there are a lot of people who have made a real difference in this game. I'm think of a friend in Texas that I read his posts all the time on Facebook, Tom Hopkins. Tom Hopkins owned and hunted the great House's Lipper dog. Everybody in coon hunting knows about Lipper. I think he produced over 5,000 puppies in his lifetime. It was a tremendous dog. As a young dog, won a pickup truck. You know, just an icon in our sport. And Tom still remembers that dog. And you know, Tom made his mark on the sport, no doubt, through Lipper. But he also made a lot of friends, as evidenced by the responses and all that he gets on social media. And that comes down, I think, a lot to the word we use, the word integrity. You know, and it's very important to anybody that wants to make their mark in this game. You can put yourself in the spotlight, but people are not going to really want to associate you with you long term if you're not a person of integrity. You know, I learned way back there that my reputation is not something that somebody else can take away from me. If I decide to get a bad reputation, then that's all on me. And if I lose it, that's because, you know, I made bad decisions and bad choices. So if we make good choices, and we make good friends, and we tell the truth, and we are friends to others, you know, not for what it can do for us, but just simply to be a friend. And so then you get to walk into a clubhouse anywhere in the country, and somebody smiles and sticks their hands out and says, "Hey, Steve, how you doing, man? Haven't seen you in a while." And I'm right back at them, and man, it feels so good. So I said here in this article, if you want to go to the head of the class in this game, breed a better litter of pups by doing your homework. Train a better hound that will win prestigious titles for you by studying the methods that have worked for others, or by developing common sense methods of your own. Have the desire and patience to really learn what makes a coonhound tick and apply that knowledge to your hounds to the point that others will see the results and come to you for advice. That's how to make your mark in this sport. And, of course, likewise, you can make a negative mark by a bunch of different ways, by being the big I, you know. I did this, I did that, me. Nah, everybody's tired of that, you know. They're tired of that in the first 5 minutes. So don't be that guy if you really want to make your mark in the sport. The eighth item I had was how to handle your hounds successfully in competition. And, you know, if you're new to coon hunting or never tried it, the competition hunts sound like something you'd like to do. You know, it's available. It's available to you now virtually every night. These clubs are having weekday hunts, one-hour hunts that you can get out there. And, of course, the best way to do that is go out and get with the club, pay their membership dues, or ask to be considered for membership, however they accept new members, and go walk along on cast. A lot of people think they don't have a dog that's eligible to compete. But I assure them if they take, go out there and walk along on a few casts and take their dog along, you're going to find out it's just like in the NFL on any given Sunday. You know, any team's capable of beating the other team. And your dog is capable of winning. Now, it may not be the best dog there. And if your dog has serious faults, he doesn't get along with the other dogs. He causes trouble at the tree. He, you know, runs junk all the time. All these kind of things that just, you know, delay and disrupt the cast and all. That's not going to be well accepted. And you're going to have to make the hard decision to either get those situations rectified or get another dog. But, you know, there's a lot of hype online about the winners photos and all, but there's a reason that some of those guys show up all the time. You know, constantly you see their names in the winner's circle. That's because they're packing good dogs. They have a coonhound at the end of the leash. When they unsnap that sucker, that dog's got one thing on his mind and one thing only, and that's to get in the dark and find a raccoon and tree it. And if you have that kind of dog, the percentages go way up for you in this game of competition hunting. If your dog just gets out there and rambles around and stumbles over a coon now and then, he'll win on a given night, no question about it. But he won't win consistently, and he won't win as many times as you see these others. A longtime friend, and God rest his soul, Larry Meeks, then owner and president or CEO of PKC, told me when I first met him, he said, you know, Steve, the future or the success of PKC will depend on good dogs. And I mentioned that on this podcast before, and it's true. You know, if you have a good one, you'll take him you'll take him to town, as we say. And each time you win will be great, and each time you were close, you knew you were still in the game, and it was anybody's ball game. And learn the rules, okay? The first thing, if you want to, well, let me back up. The first thing you need to know is your dog inside and out. You know, and that comes from hunting Monday through Thursday nights. And knowing that dog, knowing every bark, grunt, squeal in that dog, what it means, the way he's operating. Now you have the advantage of the Garmin to look at the screen and use all that information. Information is gold. You know, put all that to work for you. But you got to know that dog and know him inside and out. And that can only be accomplished by hunting that dog several times a week. Then know the rules. Know exactly what the rules entail. You know, each registry has their own little idiosyncrasies, little nuances that the other registry doesn't have. And if you're going to hunt across the spectrum of coon hunting, UKC, PKC, Pro Sport, AKC, you're going to have to know what those nuances are, what those differences are in the rules. I've mentioned this before, you know, don't make foolish calls. How many times you hear a guy say, well, I would have won, but I made a bad call. Well, you know, I heard John Wick tell the kids at a youth hunt one time, don't put minus points on your dog that it doesn't deserve. So if you're doing that to your dog, especially with any kind of consistency, you need to have a checkup from the neck up. You need to realize that you're the problem, not the dog, and refrain. You know, if it's your mouth that's getting you in trouble, put a sock in it, you know. The ninth thing would be how to maintain the health that you need to participate in this sport. I've told my listeners many times about the incident in 2006, when I had a heart attack while hunting in a competition hunt. And that's simply because I was overdoing it with the work. I was stressing. I was spending too many hours in front of a computer. You know, I I was not taking care of myself. I was not taking any mind or any notice of what I was eating. In fact, the night I had a heart attack, I had a spicy chicken, fried chicken sandwich from Wendy's that I wolfed it down like it was my last meal on earth because I was late for the deadline and or was going to be late. I didn't make it. But at any rate, we got to be in shape, you know, and coon hunting in itself is not going to get you in shape, the kind of shape that you really need to be. Now, I will grant you that these dogs nowadays are going to walk you. There's no question about that. And I've wondered, as I've seen some of the heavier guys out there competing and walking, but it tells me one thing, just walking to dog street is not a weight loss regimen that works, because there's too many heavy set coon hunters out there. Get yourself in shape. I saw a sign here down the street the other day as we were going, I don't know, to out to eat or something. Gym membership, just $10. I imagine that. I don't know if that's a week, a month, or what. But there are resources available to us to keep ourselves in shape, to eat right, to do our, you know, normal frequent checkups with our family doctors, get the blood work done, find out if the blood pressure's good, find out if, you know, if your sugar is good. You know, all of these things are important. You check the oil on your truck, don't you? You know, you check the transmission fluid. You put fluid in the windshield washer. You know, you need to go in and get yourself checked out every once in a while to make sure that you're in good physical shape. I was fortunate. They sent an ambulance out after me and picked me up and took me into the hospital. They did a heart cath and found out I needed bypass surgery, which I had. And thanks be to the good Lord, that will be 20 years ago next year. So anyway, get yourself in shape. That's one of the reasons why I can't coon hunt the way I used to. Besides being old, I'm really not in good shape. And you know, I'm preaching to the choir here. Number 10, how to avoid the pitfalls that many coon hunters fall into. That sounds rather ominous, doesn't it? Well, if you've chosen coon hunting for your chief recreational activity, and most of us have, most of us don't do a lot of other kinds of sports because coon hunting takes up a lot of time. You know, we go work our dogs, we do our chores in the evening, we have our dinner, and then we go out and stay till 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night with the hounds, and then, you know, we're up in the morning and start all over again. And we know that, you know, we're going to lose a lot of sleep. We know that our patience is going to be tried by these dogs. We know that our bank account will sorely be tried, especially if you look at the price of dog food and vet care today. And, you know, you'll wonder how in the world you got, you of all people got into this crazy sport. And you're certainly not alone. We've all had those talks with ourselves. But, you know, the one thing that I picked up on in last week's podcast with Daniel Snead was when he said even if they stopped all the competition hunts today, he would still be out there coon hunting tonight because he loves the hounds. He loves the experience. He loves listening to the dogs work the tracks, coming treed, all those things, because you love it, you know. But what a lot of young people do, especially young married people, is they devote all of their time and energy to the point that they neglect their families and their relationships. And so, you know, leaving a lovely young lady at home night after night after night while you're out with the dogs is not the recipe for a happy marriage. Your ego may tell you, well, she knew I was a hunter when she got married and yada yada. Well, yeah, she does, and she knows it even more now. And you're going to know it when you're out there coming home at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to a dark house. So listen, put yourself in the spotlight and say, you know, am I doing right by my family, by my wife, by my children? And, you know, I this is something, as I look back over my own career, I think about the fact that I spent so many hours on the road, so many Friday nights and Saturday nights that I could have been home with my son, with my wife, that I was not, because in my case, and I justified it by saying it was my job. For many of you, it's not your job. It's just something that you do. It's a great escape from the cares of the world, of life. But when we said I do to that beautiful young lady, you know, we took on the responsibility of seeing that that relationship is all that it can be. So don't be the guy that falls into the pitfall of making coon hunting 90% in your family or your relationship or your marriage 10%. Okay, well, that was a little stump that I got on. I also, in that article, I mentioned that if you know, you tell somebody you're going to take a pup out of a litter. I see this all the time on social media. You know, put me down for a pup. Put me down for a pup. And then when the pups come, well, hey, you know, unless that breeder's got the money in hand, most of the time those guys are not going to take the pups. And that's not good, fellas, because that just speaks to that integrity I talked about before. You know, don't tell somebody you're going to do something and then not do it. You're a liar. If you do that, you're a liar. Nobody wants to be known as a liar. So anyway, just do what you say you're going to do. If you're going to take the pup, take the pup. If you're going to, you know, give the guy 2 weeks trial, not done very much, and I don't really advise it. I say go try the dog, and if you like it, buy it. Then it's yours. No excuses. But anyway, if you tell a guy that, and if he doesn't like it, you can give his money back. Well, give his money back if he's not happy. Be truthful, you know, don't be that guy. All right, and then the last thing that I addressed, and, you know, don't be a slob hunter. You know, don't hunt where you don't have permission. Don't leave gates open. Don't leave litter laying around. Don't cut ruts in a farmer's field. You know, don't shine your headlights into a farmhouse window when you turn into the drive. This one can get close to the bone. Don't kill coon out of season. Don't kill every coon out of a tree. This is one of the worst ways to lose friends and create enemies, is bad-mouthing your hunting buddy's dog. Don't brag on your dog to the point of making everyone at the clubhouse nauseous. Boy, that's a hard one to keep. And let's just follow the golden rule, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Folks, this old voice crippled through an hour and 10 minutes today, and I appreciate you sitting with me. I hope that there's been something said that will help you as you journey down the road toward becoming that famous coon hunter that you aspire to be. But if that's not your cup of tea at all, and you just want to go out and turn that dog off the back porch and listen to him go down on the creek and strike a coon and ramble around down there while and come treed and walk up there in the moonlight and headlight that coon sitting out on the limb, pat that old flat head, and stroke those ears and tell him, attaboy. If that's your game, then God bless you. That's the best game of all. Until next week, folks, this is Steve Fielder with the Gone to the Dogs podcast. I want to thank especially my good friend, Buddy Woodbury at W Hunting Supply. Thank those at Alpha Dog Nutrition that provide all those great supplements for our dogs. And to my buddy, Big Mark Zep with the Zep Coon Squatter. I see he's got a new one out that is supposed to be louder than loud. So we'll try to get some information on that for a future podcast. So anyway, anybody should ask you where Steve Fielder telling me. That guy's crazy, man. He's gone to the dogs.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.